Good morning. Thanks, everyone, for joining. I appreciate you all being here, and we'll go ahead and get started in a moment, but I've obviously got a script to run through. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. Now we'll go through roll call, and I'll start with board and committee members. I'll use the audit finance committee members first. Susan Martin.
Present.
Michael Angelini is present. Lawrence Davis.
Present.
Peter Lacy.
Present.
And I guess we're covered, and we'll, as Kim and Daryl join, we'll announce their inclusions as well. Any other board members on at this point? I don't see any, so I'm going to take a quick jump. Staff, I'll move through the staff. Jeanette Weldon.
I'm here.
Denise Aguilera.
Here.
Joanne Makowitz.
Present.
Michael Morris.
Present.
Cynthia Peoples.
I'm here.
Kara Stewart.
I'm here.
Great, thanks everyone. Is there anyone else on the call at this point? Okay, thank you. For those, for individuals, must state their name and title if applicable before speaking during the meeting. Votes must be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. And in the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or email advising whether, one, the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or secondly, the time of meeting resumption. Great. Well, thank you everyone again for being here. The Joint Audit Finance Human Resources Committee meeting. We get together once a year as a joint committee, and Susan Martin is co-leading along with me. So thank you, Susan, for that. But we do get together once a year, as you'll recall, to go through particularly the budget, the compensation and benefits budget. As you know, this is sort of a two-step process. This discussion and approval leads into development of the overall budget for CHIFA. And so having the first step of the two occur today, and then subsequently the completion of the full budget with this approval incorporated into it, is important. In a moment, we'll have Cynthia go through the budget presentation for us. But first, we will take a look at and get an approval for the minutes from the May 19th, 2021, so last year's meeting of the combined committees. And so with that, I will ask if there is a motion for approval of the minutes.
I'll move it, Mike. It's Peter. Peter Lisi moves it.
Thank you, Peter. Is there a second?
Mike, second, Lawrence Davis.
Great, thank you, Lawrence. Any comments on the minutes, edits?
I will abstain because I wasn't at that meeting.
Great, thank you, Susan. Okay, so all those in favor of the minutes from the May 19th, 2021 meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Great.
Aye.
We have Susan's abstention. Any opposed? Great, thank you, the minutes pass. So with that, again, the majority of our discussion, or frankly, all of our discussion, will be about the compensation and benefits budget being proposed today to, again, be incorporated into the full budget. We'll ask Cynthia to take us through that. Obviously, you know, I think from a board standpoint, it's important for us to ensure that compensation and benefits are at a level that preserves our ability to retain our employees, but also recruit them and compensate them appropriately. And so I think Cynthia and team have done a good job of canvassing the landscape, understanding the limitations of our budget, or abilities of our budget, I should say, and coming up with a solution. So Cynthia, I'm going to let you take us through that.
Thank you, Mike. I'm going to share my screen for the presentation.
Great.
And hopefully everyone can see that already.
You've got it.
Okay, so this is a presentation of the human resource budget for the fiscal 2023. year. And as Mike mentioned, it's for the inclusion in our operating budget, which will be presented to you in June. So first, I just wanted to review some of the key employment policy changes that we made. We published a new version of our employee handbook for effective January 1. And included in that, we have our hybrid work schedule highlighted in the new policy, in our new, you know, handbook, with us being in the office 3 days and remote for 2 days. This really has an impact on workers' compensation. In 2020, we were 100% in the office. You have your sales staff, you have your admin staff. You know, there's classifications associated with, and risk associated, obviously, with everyone being in the office. For 2021, we were 100% remote. For 2022, it's probably about 75% remote. And well, because we also have the hybrid mixed in for one quarter of the fiscal 2022, I believe. And then for fiscal 2023, it's going to be the 100% of a hybrid environment with the 3 days in and the 2 days out. So all of it has an impact on the rates associated with workers' compensation. We changed from, for paid time off holidays, we changed from 12 to 13, including the Juneteenth National Independence Day as one of our fixed paid time off holidays. We implemented the Connecticut Paid Family Leave and Medical Leave Act for January 2022. The biggest change there is from our prior maternity leave policy, which really was just the mother giving birth who was able to stay out for 6 weeks fully paid by the authority. Underneath the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act, we have parental bonding. So that means the father or the mother could take the time off up to 12 weeks. And we are only compensating the difference between what other benefits may be available to an employee and their base pay for the first 6 weeks. So if they're, you know, their base pay minus whatever the state is going to offer them for the 6 weeks, even if they stay out for 12 full weeks. So there is a budget impact related to that. And then also for volunteer time, which was highlighted in the memo, we are now adding in an 8-hour volunteer day to participants in the grant internal review, on the grant internal review committee. For either of the cycles that they participate in for the client grant or the nonprofit. So they can earn up to 2 days in a calendar year if they participate on both cycles of the internal review committee. So you don't have any questions related to any of these key policy changes? All of these don't have a budget impact, but the paid family leave and the hybrid work schedules have, you know, somewhat of an impact.
Cynthia, this is Peter. I just have a quick question. On the hybrid work schedule, I'm just kind of curious, does a manager or a department head request which days that the staff report to them are in the office, or is it completely up to the individual which days they choose to be in the office, which days they aren't? I'm just kind of curious.
We've allowed people to choose which days. We've asked that they stay relatively consistent. Obviously, there are times when you might need to flip-flop a day or two, but we have asked that they, you know, let us know which days they'll be in the office on a regular basis.
And just to follow up on that, if you as a manager need to have a group meeting and you want it in person, do you have the ability to say, hey, you know, everybody in my area has got to be here on this certain day? Or, I mean, I'm just kind of curious how this rolls out.
Well, I mean, I haven't done anything of that nature, but I do believe with, you know, having Zoom and other platforms that if we wanted to have everyone present, then that is, you know, the best way to do that. I know from a planning perspective, you know, Joanne in particular, from an accounting perspective, they need to collaborate on a regular basis. They fix their schedules accordingly so that there's always coverage here in the office and overlap between schedules. And I have the same depending on the team. So if it's IT or, you know, or something along those lines for systems development and that sort of thing, I have the overlap available if I need it for meetings.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right, any other questions regarding any of these employment changes? Policy changes. Okay. So we also did the pro forma overview. So we've been asked the last year and this year to provide some level of updates in what our operating budget might look like, rather than just saying, okay, this is what our budget was in the prior fiscal year, we're gonna hold that steady and then apply the, you know, the compensation changes. So some of the assumptions that we looked at when we made updates to the operating budget from a pro forma standpoint would include our revenue assumptions that will actually still be finalized in our June presentation. So there's not accounting for the timing of new bond issues, what new bond issues, how much those bond issues will be, and then the reduction in what might end up being defeased by June 30 or after June 30, those type of things. Those assumptions have not been updated in what you're looking at. We did make some updates in our business insurance assumptions of about 5%. We reduced some of our non-cap numbers based on the fact that our cloud-based phone system has been implemented, was implemented at the end of January, beginning of February. So that was, these are the higher numbers that we removed. We canceled our Thomson Reuters financial data platform during last fiscal year, so that actually is a larger number that was removed. And then depreciation is going to be finalized for our June presentation as well, based on whatever capital projects we feel we need to include. And there's a shift also, if you recall last month, I believe it was last month when Joanne was giving her presentation regarding the January numbers, we did make a change in our depreciation method. So that may be some of the impact that you'll see to a straight line method in fiscal year 2023. And then as well, we made some increases to our maintenance contracts based on SaaS and UCaaS, and those are our software as a service and unified communications as a service platforms. So incorporating a lot of those platforms into the system, into our budget, and trying to make sure that, you know, we've got those accommodated. We've increased some of the numbers associated with that. So as a result, this is just a really high level look at the exhibit one that you have with the groupings. It's very much in line with our fiscal 2022 budget at this time. Obviously with the employment number increasing, general administrative and contracted services decreasing some, with a change in net position of about 307,000 at the moment. And then clearly we will update these numbers a little bit more going forward for the June presentation. Anyone have any questions about some of the assumptions and changes that were made at a high level?
I would just make a comment, and I don't know how big of a portion this represents, but I know in our insurances at the hospital, I mean, like in cyber insurance, we're seeing 50% increases. So 5% may be a little light. Yeah. Our property insurance, we've seen all of our insurances really have gone up and continue to go up pretty significantly.
So unfortunately, I don't remember exactly the increase in our cyber insurance, but we were very lucky in our renewal. We did not see a 50% increase. We did change our carrier. The bulk of the burden related to that particular policy falls in the Chesil budget, with Chifa and the other subsidiaries having a smaller portion of that. But we did have a lower increase in that amount than anticipated. So it did not double. If we stayed with the same carrier, I think it almost doubled. But we did only go up, I believe it was a few thousand dollars perhaps in our policy. So it was not a significant amount, but we can definitely.
Yeah, it just seems like all insurance.
I don't know if Joanne's pulling that number up now, but if she is, we could probably give that to you before.
That's okay. I just, today. So. Cautionary. Thanks.
Yeah, we were very fortunate. I think we were able to implement some of those wonderful risks and recommendations that were provided to us by Barry Dunn as well as Crow. And I do think some of them and some other items that we had on our punch list, and I do think they made a difference in keeping that rate lower for us.
All right,
so I want to get into what the salary market insight looks like from the resource organizations. Essentially, I have highlighted at the bottom what each of these resource organizations are seeing. So from Conference Board, about a 3.9% increase. They were saying, you know, the 2022 median total salary increases are projected about 3.5%. The projections for 2002 increased budgets are jumping from 3.0% in April to 3.9% in November. World at Work indicated that 30% indicate that the budgets need to increase to attract more talent, and the first one should be a 30.4, not a 304%. And the salary increase in general for them was a 3.3% for 2022 in the surveys that they conducted. The Economic Research Institute indicated that it's a tight market as well, so you have to increase with unemployment low, it becomes a tight market. You have to increase compensation to attract employees. So these numbers are also rising. In the past four quarters, it was 3.38%. And this was a report from April. It was just published at the beginning of the month. And then the projected increase for them for 2022 is 3.4%. Willis Towers Watson indicated that in certain sectors or major industry groups, which include high-tech pharmaceutical companies, 3.1, followed by healthcare, media, and financial services, about 3.0. There were others, but these are the ones where we have most of our employees employed, which would be tech and financial services. And then overall, the average increase was about 3% for 2022. And PayScale said 80% of those are concerned about the rising inflation and eroding the value of pay increases. And 92% of organizations said they would be providing base pay increases. And 44% of them are planning to give pay increases greater than 3%. And I believe this was like a 6 or 7 year stretch where it was below 3%. So overall, they were seeing a 3.3% average increase. Looking further into the government and local insight, state and local government workers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics ending in, for the 12 months ending in 12/21, wages and salaries rose by 4.5%. Private industry workers, 12 months ending 12/21, the wages rose also 5%. For the Federal Adjustment of Income Rates FAIR Act, they're proposed a 5.1 increase for 2023 and a 3.2 for 2022. For CPI, CPI itself for the 12 months ending February 2022, for all urban consumers rose 7.9%, which is the largest 12-month increase in 40 years. In March, it rose 1.2 seasonally adjusted for the 12 months ending March 2022. CPI rose 8.5%, not seasonally adjusted. Cost of living adjustments for Social Security and Supplemental Security Income COLA beneficiaries received 5.9% increase for January of this year. And in the state of Connecticut, again, we reference the fact that we are tax increased for the Paid Family Medical Leave Act of 0.5%. And the limited quasi-public information that I had showed pools of 2.5 to 4% increases, and then others that showed adding in COLA at 2%, a COLA increase of 2%, and then up to 2% for merit. Unemployment rates in the U.S. for January of 2021 over 2022 were 6.8 and 4.4. And then for the Hartford area, again, with the contraction in the labor market from January 2021 at 8.3 to 5% in 2022. So the next slide is really just a visual of all of that information, taking a look at the resource organizations in yellow and the percentages that they indicated, looking at the government indices in gray at the 5.1 for CPI and the 5.9 for COLA. The quasi-public feedback I have at 4 because it's the max. And again, that was a 2.2 or 2.5 to 4% range. And then where Chief comes in overall for the authority at 3.35% merit only increases. Do you have any questions about the any of the research organizations, government indices, or where we're landing?
No.
All right, so I'll dive right into the compensation budget proposal. So as we mentioned before, our merit is based as a result of performance evaluations for the most part. That we're now doing in advance of the budgeting process. So our total budget increase of $103,498 over projected actual total compensation for fiscal year 2022 represents the numbers here on the table on the right. So if we start with our projected compensation as of June 30th of 2022 of $2,281,000, we have staffing changes, which is really a factor of, timing of different positions coming on and them being added, to the budget in one factor originally, and then the change related to those is about a negative $3,100. Our merit increase is total $76,628. And then labor grade adjustments, we budget $15,000. And then one-time awards, we budget $15,000. And again, that's a factor of, for one-time awards, again, it's no individual more than $5,000 for a year, and a total of $15,000. Pool for all one-time awards. So our compensation budget for 2023 is $2.385 million. Do you have any questions about any of those components?
Cynthia, this is Peter. It's either a question for you or for Jeanette. Could you just give me or us a little feel for what goes into the decision or what's behind the discretionary one-time award pool? I mean, is that for somebody that goes above and beyond on a certain project, or I'm just kind of curious. I mean, I'm supportive of it. I'm just kind of curious what would
That's essentially it in a nutshell, Peter. It tends to be for that type of thing. It's either project based or something new they may have added that we maybe haven't adjusted their salary related to it, but. You could, before fiscal year end, maybe you could give them a one-time award related to just that, their extra efforts outside of their job description on a particular project, more than likely is where that comes from.
Okay, thank you.
So on the next slide, I just have a visual, again, of what it looks like historically, budget versus actual, on our compensation. And in particular, I believe most years we tend to be probably 1% to about almost 4% below. Our actual is about 1% to 4% below where we originally budgeted. I think there was probably one case where it may have been a little bit over for 2021, but the increase was less than 1% over budget. And the budget versus actual for 2022, we're at projected actual, we're at about 98.4%. So again, it's just under 2% lower than, anticipated. It's less than 2% than what we originally budgeted. So for employee benefits overview, this is kind of the walkthrough, Peter, here for the budget. For the budget memo that you that everyone received. So for our medical insurance premiums, we did, on advice of our consultant, we did use a 10% increase. And then we also did an increase in our insurance plan deductibles. And I will pause there because at the top of the call, we talked about the fact that Harvard Pilgrim is leaving the market. And I did get a chance to talk with our consultant this morning related to that. And one of the key things that he said was, he went to a meeting most recently where they said that the increases could be 10 to 12%. And originally he had said to us 10%. I mean, it's 1 or 2% difference there between that. But we have budgeted in, and we'll go over this, the medical insurance premiums in more detail because it's the larger of the numbers that are increasing for compensation and benefits. But we also did factor in a higher budgeted number related to deductibles as well for this year. So the 10% increase in the premium has an impact of about a 13.9% over the fiscal 2022 budget. projected actual, and then the HSA funding increase has about a 20% increase over the fiscal 2022 projected actual. And then for disability and life insurances, premiums, we did an increase of about 5%. And there's actually a little bit of a decrease in our budget numbers based on that information. A lot of that is driven by the addition of the Connecticut paid leave with the same provider that we do our disability insurances with. And then for the dental insurance premiums, we worked in about a 5% increase across the board over the fiscal 2022 budget. It's about 8.2%. And then over the projected actual, it's about 6.2% increase. Workers' compensation, again, it's a matter of those classifications with our hybrid work schedule. And we did increase about 71.4% from the fiscal 2022 budget, where we were 100% remote. And then it's a 78.9% over the projected actual, again, where we were 100% remote. So if you take a look at that, it's really, less than a $3,000 increase. And then again, I spoke about the Connecticut Paid Family Leave and Medical, Family and Medical Leave Act as it relates to our disability insurances as well. The addition of this as a private plan with our provider, the standard, decreased our rate for our short-term disability. But of course, we've added this in for fiscal 2023, which will be the first year, it'll be a full year. So the increase is pretty much double. So over the budget, it's a 204% increase. And over the projected actual, it's 193% increase. And again, we're going from $950 projected actual to $1,855. So that reflects the half year versus the full year in the 2023 budget. Any questions on any of those assumptions? All right. So if we dive a little bit deeper into Harvard Pilgrim, into our medical insurance assumptions here, on the left-hand side at the very bottom, I'll take you to that table first where it says HSA funding is estimated using 75% of the following plan deductibles. And that top line shows you that the fiscal 2022 budget was using deductibles of $3,500 for singles, $7,500 for family, which once you multiply that by the number of singles and families that we have, that budget was $68,000, almost $600. And our projected actual, where we were able to maintain the $2,800, $5,600 deductibles, our projected actual is just under $58,000. For this 23 budget, we use the same assumptions that we did for the 2022 budget, and you multiply that out by your singles and your families. And so that is just over $69,000. So in the conversation that I had with our consultant related to this, he did indicate based on the comparable numbers we were provided last year from the different providers other than Harvard Pilgrim, I don't believe any of them had the $2,800, $5,600 we were able to maintain by staying with Harvard Pilgrim. So it is more likely this year that that will increase, even though we were anticipating it increasing probably for the last two budget years, I believe it was. So for a fact, more than likely it's going to increase this year. So we may be closer to that, $69,000 number as it relates to the HSA component of our budget here.
Cynthia,
so if we step forward, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm getting the sense, are those still under negotiation then?
No, we don't receive our numbers related to our new plan until November.
Okay.
So we won't have that information until then. And then, for January 1st, we probably could provide some sort of update and let where it landed with Harvard Pilgrim exiting the market.
Okay. I don't know what your negotiation process looks like, but are we tipping our hand if we're essentially putting numbers in our budget that's made publicly available if we're doing this? Or is that not? Maybe I just don't understand the negotiation process.
No, I don't think this has ever been a factor related to that at all. I don't think it gets to their level.
Mike, are you suggesting that they can actually negotiate with the payers? Because they're using a broker.
We don't. We use a consultant for all of this. So
But I asked Cynthia about this before, and I don't know the details, but is this an opportunity for CHIFA to further look into using the state's plan that they offer to the, you know, municipalities and I assume quasi organizations like yourself? I don't know whether it would be less, more cost effective or not.
Worth looking into. It's a great point.
So, you know, certainly that's something we can look into, but I think, you know, one of the things, this has come up at different points in time, you know, over many years. And I think one of the things that we consider in the totality of it being both, you know, compensation and benefits is to the extent that there are perhaps policy or philosophical differences. If you're going to have a rich benefit package, maybe your compensation is a little bit lighter because people are getting things like post-retirement health benefits that the state has offered, but we don't offer. So there could be a mismatch in terms of compensation structure combined with benefits if you just start trying to, you know, take the state's benefits, but keep our own compensation structure. So it's something we'll look into, but I think it'll be in the context of, you know, also assessing what the other options are in the market using our consultant as we've done in the past.
Okay, so here we also take a look at the table on the right where we start with our projected actual for 6/30 of 2022 and step forward to where we end up with our fiscal 2023 medical insurance budget. So there's an incremental age change. Our insurance with Harvard program has had age bands. I don't know if that's something that will continue, but in it, under its current structure, we're taking a look at about a $6,000 change based on age bands. Employee turnover is with a smaller amount of about 701. And then the 10% increase comes out to about $27,000 for a change of about $34,000. So in this, we put this together again, you know, a step forward because the numbers aren't a straight line from the prior year budget. Multiply by 10% and here's your new budget. Because of those age bands, because there's only 22 of us, we're able to actually take a look at this in a little bit more detail and, you know, structure it accordingly rather than just adding a lump sum on that. So the budget is estimated using actual enrollment experience and assumptions and the new rates that are effective, that we are anticipating being effective as of January 1 of 2023. So it's our 6 months of what we do know already in the plan that we're on, and then it's 6 months of what we don't know just yet that is to come when we renegotiate these plans in the fall. Anyone have any questions about any of that additional information? All right. No. So in the home stretch here, this is just another visual of one of the graph that's in the memo itself, just where we show benefits as a percent of compensation, where we have an increase of 1.5% over the fiscal year 2022 budget, which is the ending resulting in a 33.95% for 2023. And that's an increase of 3% over the fiscal year 2022 projected actual. That's it for me. If you have any questions related to that, we ask for approval of this HR compensation budget for inclusion in the fiscal 2023 operating. That'll be presented in June.
Cynthia, this is Peter. Could you just go back to that last chart, that bar chart?
Yes.
So in the text at the bottom where it says increase over the fiscal 22 budget, it's a dollar increase, but the percentage is lower, right? Is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I? It looks like I didn't update my slide there for the projected actual. I mean, for the actual budget, it's actually 34.31. So it's a decrease in percentage, yes, but the dollar amount is an increase based on the number.
Right.
But I did not do that by the percentages. My apologies. It's by for the dollar increases.
That's all right. I just want to make sure
I understand. I didn't mean to choose that. Yes.
No worries.
And I could have put the dollar amounts on there for you.
Okay.
You know what I mean, Peter? Even the guy with the tie didn't catch that.
You got a few other things. I'm a retiree.
Any other questions for Cynthia on compensation and benefits? Great. Okay.
Can I just ask a general question, if we have a minute, based on what Jeanette said? Are there other benefits that the state would allow CHIFA to take advantage of other than medical? I'm just not familiar with that.
I'm not aware of anyone other outside of employment, compensation and related benefits, like medical benefits. I'm not aware of anything else that people have mixed and matched, so to speak. And, I will say one of the things that when we are talking about CHIFA with various parties, legislators, et cetera, one of the things that we are quite proud of and like having the ability to say is the fact that we are self-supporting. We're not relying on taxpayer dollars for our funding. And so sort of what goes along when then we typically also say we're not state employees, which also implies we're sort of one step removed as sort of a quasi being independent. So it sort of feeds into the same narrative to have our own, compensation and benefits package. But that's not the only rationale. But certainly we can look into whether or not there's anything else out there that we should consider.
Yeah, I believe they make you pay for it. I don't think but it might be just unless you're not paying a broker in there.
Right,
and I know
right.
that they're using Anthem, which typically has lower rates than a
right.
Harvard Pilgrim with the providers.
Yeah.
And I know, just from what we see here, lots of like teachers unions and the municipalities who are also independent are buying their insurance through that state program.
Mm-hmm. We'll look into it definitely.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And Jeanette, I'm glad that you brought up the point of independence too, because that does factor into the way we look at our comp and benefits. It's obviously always something that comes up when we look at the salary increase in particular, and sort of preserving that independence is important. Just, I think Susan brings up a good point. Is there a way to maybe have our cake and eat it too and take advantage of some of those low cost programs, but create our own compensation and benefits package around that. So thank you for being willing to look into that. And I think it's worthwhile. So we've been through, Cynthia, thank you for working through the presentation, and thanks to the entire team for putting that together. At this point, I would be looking for a motion to approve the employee compensation and benefits package as presented to us for the fiscal 2023 year.
I'll move it.
This is Lawrence. So moved.
Great. I've got a motion from Lawrence Davis and a second from Peter Lisi. Thank you. Any other comments or questions on the budget as proposed?
Mike, I just have a process question. Maybe it's for Jeanette. So Jeanette, this is an action item at the committee level. When it's presented at the board today, it's just an informational item, correct? It's not an action item for the full board?
I think typically the full board does sort of reaffirm the vote of the committee. Denise, is that correct?
It's just on the agenda that's been distributed. It doesn't say that it's an action item. So I just want to make sure we're doing what we should be doing at the board meeting.
Right, Pete, it's Denise. I don't think it's an action item because this will be put forward to the Audit Finance Committee for inclusion in the budget that is then recommended to the board for full approval. So it's just a report.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for the clarification. So we do have a motion and a second. Any other comments or questions? Great, thank you. So I will ask for a vote and approval of of the budget as presented. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Say aye. Any abstentions?
I'm going to abstain. And my reason for abstaining is because I'm told that management is receiving 2.5% increase at the state level versus the 3.36. So I don't want to approve anything above what the state is going to give. And I know that it isn't complete yet, but that's my reason for abstaining.
Great. Thank you, Kim. Thank you for the explanation. And we will note that in the minutes, of course. Great. Well, thank you all. The budget has passed. And so I will move on to adjournment. Do I have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second.
A motion from Peter, a second, I think, from Lawrence. All those in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
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 Thank you.